This is Finding Trout Food, a part of an archive broadcast, Nature of Things, from March 30th, 1984.
Hi, I'm John Weeks, and this is The Nature of Things, a program about the world we live in, presented by FM 90 and the Rice Creek Field Station, a unit of the State University College at Oswego. Well, the trout season is almost upon us now, and although I've fished for trout and enjoyed it a great deal, I find that I'm even more interested in and turned on by the things that the trout feed upon. If you've never gone down to a trout stream after the water's dropped down, turned under some stones, turned over some stones and looked under them to see what kind of life exists there, then maybe you'd be interested in this. It's one way to learn about what's there that the trout is interested in. One of my favorites to observe is a little creature that actually is probably nature's master mason, the caddisfly. Unlike some of the other things like stoneflies and mayflies, for which many of your artificial flies are tied to resemble, these moth-like forms, the caddisflies, have complete metamorphosis. That is, the egg is followed by a worm-like creature or larvae, and that's followed by a resting stage, a pupa. And finally, the adult comes out of the water, and when it does and flies, it looks quite a bit like just a sort of dull-colored moth. It's the larval form that provides the most interest for their soft-bodied forms, which have developed the ability to construct from sand grains, small pebbles, bits of plant material, or even the shells and skeletal parts of other animals, little houses which they cement together using their own saliva-like secretion. It's just like cement, which hardens on contact with the water. So using these little stones or bits of vegetation, they can actually build a little case around themselves. This is a protective device. Not only does it protect them from harm, but also it makes them almost indistinguishable from the bottom and serves them in that way, the bottom of the stream, I mean. The form of the cases varies greatly from species to species and from one place to another in the stream. One group makes perfect sand grain replicas of snail shells, for instance. Another group makes perfect little log chimneys. They cut up little bits of twigs and pile them together almost like Lincoln logs, and when they get through, they've got a long chimney-like structure. And they hide their body inside of that, and from there they can forage around. Most of these houses are made to resemble the surrounding in which the insect find themselves. Species which live in quiet locations, in backwaters and so forth, tend to construct their larval cases of bits of vegetation. These cases are light and portable and allow them to forage in search of food. Most of their food is either vegetation or, in some cases, small insect life. Those species which live in swift water tend to build their cases of sand grains or tiny pebbles. They often use larger ballast stones and further anchor them, their cases to the rocks. In some cases, they cement the cases to the rocks so they won't drift away in the heavy stream flow. Several groups, however, are entirely predaceous, and many of them make no cases at all. But they've got a device that serves them. Instead of soft body coverings, theirs is thickened and more protective. Some of those forms spin an ingenious little net, part of which serves as a home site and part of which bellows out in the water and helps to entrap stray stream life, which is then devoured. The first case, maybe, of the fishing net. When it comes time for the larvae to undergo transformation to the adult form, they spin a silken cocoon within their case, or with a free case forms in some protected location, and there spend several weeks in transformation. When they emerge from the cocoon, they climb out of the water and transform to dun-colored or modestly striped and spotted adults. These things do look moth-like, but they're easily distinguished from true moths because true moths have feather-like antennae, whereas these have long filamentous horn-like antennae in front of them. After breeding, the females lay from several hundred to as many as 1,000 eggs, either in strings or masses attached to sticks, stones, or plant stems in the water, just above it. All of this depends upon the species, of course, the differences. There are said to be about 200 North American species. They prefer clear, unpolluted water. Some of them can't exist in even mildly polluted water. A careful examination of the underside of rocks and sticks in running water, or patient observation of the bottom in ditches and shallow embayments, may reveal how abundant some of these species can be. One of my most memorable experiences with caddisflies occurred many years back in a shallow rock-strewn stream near Lowville. It was an unusually warm spring morning, and I had arisen with the sun. I sat down at the edge of the stream, contemplating the abundant bottom life. It was just scudding all over. As the sun peeked over the red pines which fringe the eastern horizon, it caught the just many, many nets of these free-case caddis. One is called Hydropsyche, which was so abundant there that they just seemed to be spread all over at intervals. Up to that time, they had been nearly invisible, but now they glowed like tiny jewels suspended in the downstream edges of flat rocks in the bottom. I ran to get my camera and a close-up attachment and spent over an hour photographing and observing them. It was quite interesting. I enjoyed it. And I was amazed to see how things wafted down by this current would get caught in these nets, and then the adults would reach out, or the worms, I mean, would reach out and grab them and pull them in for food. Why worry about caddis? Well, as I said before, caddis are beloved of trout. If you've ever opened up a trout to see what it had been eating and found that it looked like it had been eating sticks or stones, all that remained in the stomach, you may very well have seen the aftermath of a trout feeding on a caddis worm. If it's important to trout, then it's probably worth knowing about for trout fishermen. That's all I have to say for today. I hope you found this interesting. Tune in next week. Thanks for listening, and keep it natural.